It's not good.
Your phone's dead.
Yeah, look at your phone. Your phone's dead too.
We don't need our phones.
Don't need.
No, because we're recording.
Oh.
Technical episode, Kyle. You ready?
Here we go.
Let's get it going. Yeah.
Nice.
Another episode of Smack Talk RC.
Smack Talk RC.
No, BKRC.
Thank you. Okay.
Podcast.
Yeah.
The next I miss generation. Smack Talk RC podcast.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you?
I miss good old Bobby Watts.
Yeah.
He's got bigger fish to fry right now, though.
He's a busy guy. He's occupied. He's engaged.
He just got engaged.
He's engaged.
Congratulations, Mr. Watts.
To be married. Yep. To good, a female, yep. So
good deal.
Yeah, good for him.
Congratulations.
Yeah, no, good for him. He's got himself a good girl. But anyway, so we got quite the topic today.
Yeah, but before we get into the topic, what's new with you?
New with me? Well, we're getting ready for Urcha, which has just been quite a challenge. Been working on helicopters and getting machines ready, and working on a two-blade heli and a three-blade heli and a backup heli and a fireball and mini comet, and then, you know, the day-to-day stuff. And my car completely broke down, so I had to go and buy a brand new one. And you know, just another day in life. But what about you?
What's new with you? Congratulations on the new car. It's pretty
thank
cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Kyle just bought a Toyota, brand new, yeah, 0 miles.
2018 Toyota RAV4.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, your turn. What's new with you?
I have to give thanks to your mom.
She helped. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got to rely on your parents.
Way
sometimes.
To go, mom.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Nailed it.
Me? Nothing. Mm-hmm. Other than crashing a Tortuga today.
Not your fault.
Yeah, kind of.
Not really. Well,
we'll get into the Tortuga subject in some other episode. We're discussing that today. But as we gear up for Urcha, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been, you know, I had my vacation,
mm-hmm.
then I had to go to Miami to take care of some personal business, mm-hmm. so I went out there Sunday night, it was a good time, I ate Colombian food, it was really good.
Did you?
Colombian food, yes, very nice.
Really?
It was like a big grill thing with like sausage and blood sausage. Have you ever tried that? It's a black sausage.
What is a blood sausage?
Made of blood. Oh, it's freaking awesome.
No.
Yeah, it's a love and hate. You wouldn't like it. You would hate it. But
why?
It's like a big, because it's black and nasty looking. It's like blood. It's like grilled blood. Yeah, no, it's awesome. Yeah, it's badass.
It sounds good.
Columbia. I ate that, and yeah, we stayed in a nice hotel downtown Miami, and like, yeah, it was interesting. We went to South Beach.
No, you did not.
Yeah, we were in South Beach. I forgot to post. I have pictures and everything.
Really?
Yeah, it was cool. I would never live there, but it was good to go just for a few hours. So.
You know who lives down there? One of our very good friends, Mr. Frank
Moradillos. But I don't think he's like in any of that disaster part of Miami. I think he's down in South Miami or Kendall or something. Like he's away from the disaster. It's pretty chaotic there. Like, yeah, I was in South Beach in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
There you go.
Yeah. Badass. South Beach is a great place.
Huh.
Not that I would ever live there again, but...
looks like fun. Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get on to the topic. Let's talk today. We're going to talk about blades.
Blades. One of the most important parts of our RC helicopters.
And by any means, disclaimer here, we're not... aerodynamic you know, engineers, we're not you know, we're not true experts when it comes to I would say aerodynamics and so forth, but we have been in the hobby long enough that we've seen blades come and go. I think combined we've tried almost every single blade that there has been produced since I can recall,
pretty much.
So we can share experience and give you some tips and ideas and educate the audience as to what we've found, you know, with regards to blades in the last so many years. Plus, obviously, you know, I've had a lot of experience with blade manufacturing for a lot of different reasons. We'll get into that later. So I know a thing or two about blade design and blade manufacturing. So I think this will be a cool episode. It's a little bit too technical. I hate too technical of an episode because it takes away from the fun.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of bummed out, actually.
No, I'm fine, but...
You have a lot going on, so you're kind of
stressed.
Out of it today.
I'm stressed.
Why are you so stressed?
I have to compete at IRCHA, and I haven't competed in a long time, so...
What do you mean? You competed last year.
Yeah, that's a long time, man. It's a year. I guess Rotolite doesn't count. I just made a routine at 2 a.m. the night before and just winged it.
Past
but,
tense.
Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, we're going to go over blades. We'll try and keep it unbiased. You know, I represent SAB and Switch, and, you know, you own Switch Rotor Blades. But we'll keep it unbiased and try and keep it pretty general and just get right down to it.
Yeah, the whole point of the episode is to talk about blades in general. We're not trying to pitch anything.
Right.
But with that said, we're going to talk a little bit about our own brand, Switch, just because... Someone, I think it was Rob Winter or somebody, made a post on RC Heli Hangout a couple days ago, and he said, oh, I can't wait till Wednesday for the next podcast. And I said, well, give us ideas, because we're always looking for ideas. And one of the ideas was blades. And it's funny, I think it was Andrew Lax. He's one of our team guys at SAB USA. And I told Andrew, I think you've spoken with Kyle. He said, no, I haven't. But Kyle and I have been discussing doing an episode on blades. And, you know, one of the questions that we were asked is to talk a little bit about Switch blades and the differences between the different kinds or whatever. So we're not going to spend too much time talking about blade history. I don't think there's much to talk about. I think most blades have always been based on a NACA design. You know what NACA stands for, Kyle?
No.
I don't remember what NACA stands for.
N-A-C-A.
Yeah. It's national, what is it? Okay, we'll have to get back to that because I feel like a complete ignorant, dumb person. But it has to do with the types of airfoil. And most of them have always been based on a NACA or a NACA design.
Mm-hmm.
And they've evolved over the years. And there's always been this... I guess you could call it a fight between manufacturers to see who's going to make the next, the best, the most efficient design.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say anything bad about anyone, but I don't think anybody really has done anything significantly drastic to change the blade landscape in the industry. Don't you agree?
Well, the biggest change that I think we've seen is people are throwing some pretty wild tips into the design. You know, just to name a few, there's the VTX rotor blade, which has a super wild tip, and then the Helix rotor blade had a special tip, and the Cyclone blade had a swept tip. And, you know, outside, I know there's a lot more that goes into the airfoil than I could, you know, say, because I'm not an engineer in that sort of field. But I think the airfoil is kind of changed slightly, but tips is where really people are getting unique these days.
Yeah, totally. And I still don't remember what NACA stands for, but it has something to do with it. It's something about an advisory committee. So it could be National Advisory Committee of Aeronautics or something like that. But basically, there's different airfoils that follow into that category. And a lot of the manufacturers have been making their blade design airfoil based on one of those standard NACA airfoils.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, I think that the main differences over the last decade have been that manufacturers have started to experiment with different tips more than anything.
Right.
Or a sort of taper design or something. But at the end of the day, the airfoil is still based on an ACA design.
Right.
Because it's what provides, it's a proven design that provides the right amount of lift.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas back in the day, up until I would say about 10 years ago, 10 to 12 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, most of the blades were manufactured with wood and just covered with some kind of covering, you know, I don't know, not monocoat, but what?
It's something similar to that. Yeah.
Something like a vinyl or some sort of covering, a plastic heat shrink type material. then over the course of the last decade to 15 years, we've seen more and more and more carbon fiber blades, to the point where over the last decade, we have not seen any wooden blades anymore.
Yeah.
And the new standard is carbon fiber. So.
Right. Carbon fiber for big helis. But if you go into the smaller helis, like the blade line, you're going to see some plastic blades. Those are just a mold where they design a plastic blade. And that's for, you know, stuff I would say probably 200 size and smaller. They use a plastic blade because it's so small. I mean, why would you put a carbon blade on a 200 size heli?
But wood is almost gone completely.
Wood is gone, yeah.
And I think one of the reasons why carbon fiber has become so popular and the predominant material used in manufacturing rotor blades is just simply because carbon fiber has dropped in price over the last so many years. And it's also easier to manufacture a carbon fiber blade today than it was 15 years ago by a long shot.
Sure.
Machining has gotten easier. The molds are easier to make these days than they ever were. I mean, the whole, if you think of RC helicopters and all the stuff that goes on in the production of an RC helicopter, carbon fiber, not only carbon fiber, but CNC aluminum, you know, you see parts in an RC heli today that you could only dream of 15 years ago.
Sure.
Because there weren't CNC machines that were capable of making such precise cuts with such tight tolerances. I mean, things have evolved. So now the standard is carbon fiber.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about Switch. And again, I don't want to make this a biased podcast, but people have asked me about Switch. How did you guys end up with Switch?
Switch rotor blades.
So my wife used to work, Susie used to work for Ready Heli. And ReadyHeli.com. They were a very big online retailer. And ReadyHeli had a couple of sister companies. ReadyRC, which was distribution. Actually, that's what Susie used to handle as distribution, ReadyRC. And they had Revco, quote-unquote Revco, which was their manufacturing division.
Mm-hmm.
And in their manufacturing division, they were making pinions, and they made the edge blades.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had plans to make a motor and an ESC and even a helicopter. It just never came to fruition. But she was in charge of pretty much launching the Edge brand of blades to the market. And this is back in 2009. I was at IRCHA one year and she showed up with Edge blades. And I said, I told her, babe, I really feel bad for you because you'll never get pros to fly these blades because the market is saturated. You know, there's V-Blades, there's Radix Blades, there's all these other brands. There's too many brands. And to my surprise, within a matter of 2 years, I think Edge became the number one selling blade at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember they were moving thousands and thousands of sets of blades a month. It was incredible. And then Susie and I left Ready Heli and we started working with SAB. And then later on, of course, we started our own company, BK Designs. And at some point in the last, I think, 3 or 4 years, Ready Heli just went out of business. They shut their doors. And we were approached by the owners of Funky, the manufacturer of the blades in Hong Kong. And we were asked if we would want to take over that void that was left by Edge blades being out of the market. And after a lot of consideration and thinking and everything else, we decided to go with it, to do it. And I said my contingency was I don't want to use the name Edge because it was already a trademark name. It had already been established in the U.S. and overseas. We wanted to do something new, make a couple of changes here and there, and just go along with it. And they were good with it. So that's how Switch came to life. And early summer of 2015. And a lot of people say it's the same as Edge. Yes, a lot of the blades use the same mold. So there's been very few changes being made. More than anything, some fine-tune adjustments. There's been some new sizes launched to the market, like 383s are new, 283s are new. I think, I can't remember, but I think we did like a, I don't remember if the 553 was there. I think we made that. There's been a few new sizes and a few minor tweaks.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a good old proven blade. You know, it doesn't, like, I think we were interviewed at the, what was it? Javier Moreno's podcast?
Mm-hmm.
And they asked, I made a comment and said they're not good at anything, but they're good at everything.
They're not good at anything, but they're not bad at anything either. It's a very neutral.
They're
neutral
not form good at anything, but they're good at everything.
Right.
So it's like, which we'll get into that because I think that's important. That I don't think there's a perfect blade and a crappy blade. I think that all the blades have their own merits.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
So also somebody asked, what's the difference between the XF and the not and the regular switch blades? XF just they're just tuned for smack. They don't track as well in big air flight, but they move quicker and they're more responsive when you're doing fast maneuvers on the deck.
Right.
Is that a good way to put it?
I mean, I fly both SAB and switchblades, and when I bolt on a set of switchblades, it kind of depends on what mood I'm in. That sounds weird, but if I kind of want to do more precise flying, more big air flying, hurricanes, loops, stuff like that, I'll probably bolt on a set of standards. But if I want to go out and just, you know, beat the heck out of a helicopter and just do smack, and, you know, if it's like end of the day at a fun fly and, you know, the go-off zone, you're just doing smack and trying to keep it low, then the XFs are perfect for that because they're super light. They're CG'd for smack, so any sort of like flips and TikToks and stuff like that is real easy. But if you're going to do big flying, like big hurricanes and loops and anything with speed, you got to be real careful with the collective and elevator, because if you get off on either of those, then the helicopter could pitch up or pitch in any direction because it can get unstable at high speeds. So
I agree.
But
so that's the main difference. I think, you know, we sent Tarek, our friend Tarek Alsadi, a set of XFs. That's the blade he prefers. Mm-hmm. And as you can tell, he doesn't really do a lot of big maneuvers. He mm-hmm. does everything really tight, really fast, really aggressive on the deck.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want, an XF blade. If you, on the other hand, want to do more of sport flying, then you want the regular kind. You don't want the XFs.
Right. Both are good. They're just tuned for different styles, that's all.
What about brands? What do you think are the main differences? It's such a broad question and so hard to answer. But the brands that just jump at you, like all the popular brands. Let's talk about popular brands. We got, of course, Switch. Then we got Rail Blades from, Matt Bodos, our friend Matt. We have Cyclone from Tim Jones.
You have Align Blades.
We have Align Blades from Align Factory. We got
Halo Blades.
I haven't seen them lately. I don't know.
I think you can still get them. I think they're still around. Then there's VTX blades from Mikado USA.
Mikado USA.
Actually, I guess it's VTX Designs, but
yeah, VTX Designs. It's an association with Mikado.
Sure.
And what else is there? We have Rotortex.
You say Zeo blades?
Zeo blades. Yeah, Rotortex blades. Rotortex. We have MS Composite.
Yeah.
Spin blades.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of blades out there.
It's a lot of blades.
I'm sure we're missing a couple few, but I mean, I'm drawing a blank now on more brands. But basically, I think right in this day and age, at least for the past couple of years, it's really hard to buy a brand of blades that don't fly well. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree.
Because everything now, the technology has advanced so far in manufacturing that no matter what you buy, you're gonna get a good blade, whether it's a switch blade or an Align blade or. Even if you find an old set of Radix blades somewhere, you know, everything's going to fly well.
Yeah, I agree.
They're all
but
well.
I would put them into two categories. I think there's the value category, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I don't want to say that they're not as good as any other brand, but the value category, by that I mean they are not blades that are meant to be used by advanced pilots in the sense that they might not track very well under extreme maneuvers. They might have a flutter here or there.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not quite at the high performance level, right?
Yeah.
And not to say that they're bad, but there's that category, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like Zeo fits into that. Beautiful blades. Great design. Like, nothing wrong with them. I'm not trying to discourage anybody from buying them.
Mm-hmm.
If you're into sport flying, hovering, learning, you want to crash your stuff or you feel like you're going to crash, buy a set. Please do, because they work well,
mm-hmm.
and they're awesome looking. They have a beautiful design. KBDD is making blades, I think.
They still are. That's
and they
correct,
still are.
Yeah.
And I think they fall under that category. I think they're solid blades. Is it something that Kyle Stacey is going to fly in competition? Maybe not. Is this something that
never
Kyle Dole's going to fly in competition? Not.
Nope.
But are they great for everyday flying and beating them up and just getting your practice in? Absolutely. I have nothing to say about them.
Yep.
Then you have the higher end line of blades. And it kind of goes to where, you know, you have the middle of the road and then the very high end, you know, based on price.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you get to that level, and most of them are manufactured by Funky mm-hmm. out of Hong Kong, it's a solid manufacturer. I think you can't go wrong with any brand. If you're looking for a high performance blade that can do anything that you want to throw at, while maintaining, you know, stability and good tracking, I think you can go with any of the other brands we mentioned, and they're all of them are equally good.
Agreed.
Some of them are going to be more stable than others. Some of them are going to be more unstable. Some are going to shine at smack, whereas they're not going to be as good at for stability and big air flying. Some of them are going to be super stable and fly awesome in big air, but are going to be a little sluggish in smack.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to tell. You almost have to try it for yourself and draw your own conclusions, because everybody has a different feel and mm-hmm. a different preference based on their flying skills and what they expect the helicopter to do. Don't
sure.
you agree?
Sure. And then there's another point that I just thought of is, say you find a blade that you really like how it flies and you want it for every other size of your helicopter. That's where I think, you know, like a switch rotor blade would shine, because every single size is available. So say you fly your 693s and you like them. Oh, well, these fly good. Well, the 553s are a similar design, so you might like those on your 550 size heli. So another thing to consider is how many sizes are available for the brand that you like. You know, and then like Bert mentioned, that they vary in price as well. So not to bash them by any means, but I think the most expensive blade available right now is the VTX blade.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I think they're 160, 170 a set.
Yeah, they're a lot. Yeah,
it's a lot of money, but you get what you pay for. It's an extremely, extremely well-flying blade. Yeah, and I think they have 550s and 690s and 717s and working on other sizes as well. But, you know, it kind of comes down to, do you want, you know, something like that, or do you want something more middle of the road, like a switchblade that still flies really well, or a rail blade that flies really well that's, you know, at a lower cost?
Where, not to bash VTX, because I think their product is awesome.
Yeah.
But it again, it's a personal preference thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that additional 5 or 10% performance worth to you $50 more or $70 more? It's all in the eye of the beholder. It's all on what people want to do.
Right.
There's no right or wrong. It's just, you got to try it for yourself.
It's up to you.
You know, you're going to buy the latest and greatest iPhone, or you're going to buy, like, you know, one generation older, or you're going to buy, like, where do you draw that line? They're so close to each other. It's all a matter of, like, what you guys want.
Mm-hmm.
But to narrow it down into what to look for, I think that's the most important part of it all. What to look for in a blade.
Yes.
First of all, safety.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure it's a safe blade.
Yes.
It has a good track record.
Yep.
It's not separating. It's not delaminating in flight. It's not breaking at the root. You know, I can only think of one or two examples of brands that I've known, that I know have had issues like that. But other than that, almost every single blade that you can buy these days, including most of the ones we mentioned, are all safe to fly. So that's the first thing to think about, safety.
Well, what makes a blade safe? Let's kind of elaborate a little more on that.
Manufacturing process, I would say. Manufacturing process. Some blades have a, what do you call it?
The safety wire.
Safety wire, yeah. I mean, is it really necessary? I don't think it is. I know I was sponsored by V-Blades. I think you were, weren't you?
By V-Blades? Yeah.
And V-Blades were made with a wood core, and they didn't have a safety wire.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never heard of an instance when anybody that I could think of ever had a problem safety related with breaking a blade during a crash.
Mm-hmm.
But there was another brand from Europe that had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at XFC one year,
mm-hmm.
and somebody almost lost their eye.
Mm-hmm.
Not even worth getting into details.
Nope.
But what I'm getting at is, I just don't think the safety wire is essential. It's a good thing to have.
Well, to play devil's advocate, the brand that you're speaking of did not have a safety wire per se.
Correct.
And I don't want to get into the details because I really don't want to get into that brand and all
but
that.
It also didn't have a wood core, whereas V-Blades had a wood core.
But to also play on that, I had a friend at my home field who had a V-Blade ripoff right at the blade bolt. It separated the blade bolt and it shot a blade from the helicopter. So would a safety wire have saved that? Probably not. But what I see a safety wire being helpful in is if you crash and you crash right on the head and you hit the blades, the safety wire should more or less keep the blades somewhat together. They're going to crack, and if you guys have crashed a set of blades, you're going to see that thin wire holding the whole blade together. And the whole idea around that is just when you hit the ground and those blades go from 2,000 RPM to nothing in a hurry, that it doesn't shoot any carbon or any pieces of the blade out in any direction. Just kind of keeps the whole blade together. And so it'll bend and look all crazy, but that's a safety feature.
So safety, to me, is important. To me, that's the number one thing I look at. What's the track record? Has there been any issues? And not necessarily people getting injured. I'm not going that far, but saying like, is, you know, people that crash and they've had experience with crashing a certain brand, is there any concerns? I can vouch for Funky.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say Funky, I'm generalizing. It's not just switch blades. It's the all edge blades. It's rail blades. It's halo blades. It's VTX blades. It's any blade manufactured by Funky. Rotortech. Funky is a superb manufacturer. They make incredible work. They've been doing this for decades.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they do. They have a big factory outside of Hong Kong, like in mainland China. And all they do is blades. And they do an exceptional job. Quality, reliability, durability, like safety, everything that they do is superb. I have nothing. I don't hesitate to recommend a Funky Mate blade to anyone.
Agreed.
Not to say that the other manufacturers are not as good, but I know I have a lot of experience with Funky, and they've made countless of different brands over the so many years. I mean, they used to make Radix blades. I mean, they made almost every blade brand known to man. So they're superb. So let's leave that safety there, because that's important.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing to look for is stiffness, right?
Sure.
Let's skip this court-wise and span-wise, but let's talk about stiffness. Talk about stiffness a little bit.
Stiffness is funny. It's something that I've kind of learned through
trial and error,
yeah. And you know, helping with SAB on their blades. Basically, a lot of people, their first assumption is that span-wise stiffness is the key to stopping a helicopter from boom striking, but that's not the case. It's cord-wise, so you don't want the blade to twist in the air at all. So what we've learned is that, you know, span-wise, through the whole blade, it can be super soft, kind of like a noodle. But
And to people that don't understand the terminology, I mean, everybody knows what span means, but like from root to tip...
Mm-hmm.
The lengthwise, mm-hmm. I guess you could say, is a synonym to span-wise.
Sure.
You don't want the blade to be too stiff. You really don't.
Sure. Yeah.
Some of them are, and like we'll get into that because I want to bring up our friend Tarek when it comes to that.
Right.
But generally, you've found, right, Kyle, that if the blades give span-wise, if they give lengthwise, if they're not too stiff, they fly better.
They do. They fly better and they sound better, because if they're too stiff, like the helicopter's got to give somewhere. If the whole thing is just a flying piece of concrete, it's going to fly horrible. But so there's got to be give somewhere. So I've found that like collective stops and cyclic stops are smoother, crisper, and more responsive if there is some span-wise flex in there. But you do not want cord-wise. So like twisting. If a blade twists, it's going to fly horrible. And you run the risk of boom striking, because due to centrifugal force, like a blade can't really flex down from centrifugal force and the strength of it, but it can twist and then, you know, flex down and cut
so
the off.
So court-wise flexibility, you want it to be as stiff as it can be.
As possible,
court-wise meaning from leading edge to trailing edge. Mm-hmm. Width-wise, you want it to be really strong there. You want it to be stiff.
Right.
But span-wise, you want a little bit of a flex.
You do
want to
give.
And interestingly enough, I feel like to elaborate a little bit on that. When you have a flexible blade span-wise that is very rigid court-wise, you can do big maneuvers, big loops, big rolls, big hurricanes with sudden stops. The helicopter feels like it's on rails. It tracks well.
Mm-hmm.
The minute you stiffen up the length of the blade, you make it stiff court-wise and span-wise, then the helicopter does not seem to track well in big maneuvers. It wants to, it has a, wouldn't say amount of its own, but it becomes extremely sensitive to any kind of input, even to the same flight controller inputs to stabilize it.
Sure.
And it becomes like, I call it ice skating. It's like you're doing a big hurricane and you feel like you're wearing ice skates and you're about to fall at any second. You know, it's like, it's just, it's, you're on the seat of the pants. Now, stiffness on the length of the blade, so span-wise stiffness, is great for really hard, aggressive smack, like Tarek.
Sure.
So Tarek flies the TBTA SAB blades.
Mm-hmm.
They're extremely stiff span-wise, and they're very light.
Mm-hmm.
So he can get away with murder. He can just use very high head speed, very sudden stick inputs. The blade responds really well. But if you pay attention, he does not fly very big. He doesn't let the helicopter do its own natural sort of hurricane or big loop where the helicopter's flying on its own. He's always feeding some kind of stick input.
Correct.
If I took his own setup and I tried to do a big hurricane, I would be like almost, I would be terrified because I wouldn't feel in control of the helicopter. But if I was just doing my usual old school smack, rainbows and TikToks and things like that on the deck, then it would feel great.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, like, you need to keep that in mind depending on your flying style. I think that for 95% of the people out there, they're going to want a blade that is flexible span-wise. Because even if they do smack, they're still going to do some big air. Like, I do a little bit of smack, but I like to do big air. So I don't like a stiff blade span-wise.
Sure. Sure.
So, conclusion with regards to stiffness. You want, for the most part, 90% of the time, you want a flexible blade span-wise, but you always want a stiff blade court-wise.
Always.
Yeah.
There's never a time when you're going to want that to be soft that way.
Yeah.
But moving on, how about we move on to what makes a blade auto better? What do you think?
Okay, so that's interesting because that brings us to court-wise and span-wise CG.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're all related.
It's all tied together.
So a span-wise CG is where the blade balances itself from root to tip.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sweet spot in there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're too close to the root, in other words, if you have too much root weight, the blade is going to be inherently unstable.
Mm-hmm.
If the blade is inherently unstable, it is going to flip faster and roll faster. It's going to have a much faster cyclic rate, but it's going to suffer instability in big air.
Correct.
With that same characteristic, if the blade is too heavy at the root and too light at the tip, the blade will not auto very well. It will lose its inertia faster.
Right. It's all down to inertia.
Correct. It'll lose its inertia faster, so it'll slow down during an auto rotation faster than a blade that has more weight at the tip.
Correct.
Than the root.
Correct.
In the same fashion, a blade that has more weight at the tip than the root will be more sluggish when it comes to roll and flip rate, but it'll track much better in big air flight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding that sweet balance. And this is why we keep going back. I keep going back and saying there's no right or wrong.
Right.
There's no good or bad brand. There's no great blade or bad blade. They're all good in their own unique ways.
Mm-hmm.
Some are more stable for big air. Some shine better, more at flip rate. Some are perhaps more agile on the deck, on smack, but they don't track as well in big air. You always sacrifice one aspect of your flying envelope in favor of another aspect.
Correct.
You can never get them all to work perfect.
It's never going
to
happen.
You can find a good combination of everything, but you cannot. But when you find that combination, you will find a blade that excels more at one or another aspect.
Mm-hmm.
At smack versus big air, or at autos versus whatever, and you just got to live with it. You're not going to get the best of every world. There's too many worlds to get the best of every world.
And right? If you find it, let me know, because I've been looking for the past 18 years.
Yeah,
and
I'm still trying to make one, but it doesn't happen. Yeah,
it's not easy. There's always a drawback. But
so autos. So
yeah,
I think there's more to it than that, right? Because there's also the airfoil in itself. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different things. But mm-hmm. I think what really makes a Blade Auto better is the CG.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
Well, I mean, CG plays an effect, I believe, for an aerobatic auto. Because if you're going to be doing flips and rolls and pyro flips on the way down, you don't want to be stalling the blade. Because you only have... What you want to be able to do is speed the head back up. You don't want to slow it down. So with aerobatic autos, you don't want to be slowing it down any more than you have to.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's why, like, a heavier blade with more inertia, you'll stand a better chance to speed it back up.
So overall weight is important in an auto, too.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But remember, the CG, to me, is the number one thing. Because if you have a 700 millimeter blade on a 700 class machine,
mm-hmm.
and your span YCG is 150 millimeters from the tip,
mm-hmm.
your blade is going to auto much better than if your span YCG is 350 millimeters from the tip.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter if the overall weight of the blade that has the CG farther in towards the root is much higher. It doesn't matter. So it both work kind of together, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have to feed off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a blade that weighs 240 grams, which is a lot of weight for a 700 class blade,
mm-hmm.
but the CG is too close to the root, versus a blade that only weighs 200 grams, but the CG is very close to the tip,
mm-hmm.
you're going to prefer the 200 gram blade that has the CG closer to the tip, right?
Of course.
So it's all trade. It's all trade.
It's all balance.
And there's it. I know people are listening to this. Are like, really? You're not helping here. But there's no. It's not an. I wouldn't say it's an exact science. You have to try blades for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the purpose of this podcast is to educate you. So let's say you guys go out there and you buy a set of Cyclone blades and a set of rail blades. Put them on a table, and you don't even need a balancer. Put them on a table and start pushing the tip of the blade out the edge of the table, and see what's the point in which that blade is going to want to fall off the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that gives you an idea of where that span YCG is, right?
Yeah.
And you can compare the two and see and fly them and see, oh, whoa, the rails have, I don't know, I'm just throwing this out of my butt right now, but the rails have, you know, a CG that's closer to the tip than the Cyclones. Example, I don't know if that's the case or not.
Mm-hmm.
But now you get the idea as to why those rail blades auto better, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
I mean, that's... Unfortunately, there's nothing much to say other than that those are the things that affect blade performance.
And you could weigh the blade as well. If you have a scale at home, a gram scale,
yeah,
preferably,
yeah.
Weigh the blade. Generally, if you do buy a set of blades, if it's a two blade set of blades, the weight's probably going to be between 170 and, I don't know, probably 210 at max. So if you find if you compare two sets of blades and say one's 200 grams and, you know, another set's 170 and the 170 flips faster, well, they're lighter. So, of course, they're going to flip faster. So, it really is a science. You know, you can just kind of, you know, try a bunch of different brands. And if you really want to confuse yourself, you can put a three-bladed head on it.
Oh, God.
And start all over again.
And the thing with the CG that's interesting, fascinating, is that there's also the court YCG, right? From
mm-hmm.
leading edge to trailing edge. And I personally, I don't think that has anything to do or does not affect performance in an auto rotation in any way, shape, or form.
Sure.
But it does affect how stable the blade is, because the core YCG changes what we call the lead lag. You know what that is?
Generally.
It's how much the receding blade leads or lags with respect to the other blade, right? And so you want a blade that always favors weight on the leading edge side versus the trailing edge side,
mm-hmm.
Because that gives it stability. But if the blade is too leading edge heavy, it's going to fight itself during pitch changes. And a pitch change is not necessarily a collective change. It could be an aileron or an elevator change. It's a cyclic change as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also a sweet spot right there, right? And measuring the court YCG is not something that everybody can do. Just like I said, you can measure the what do you call it, span YCG on a table, because you can start pulling, you know, letting the blade hang off the table on its tip and find the spot when the blade wants to fall, you can kind of get close to, not exact, but you can get within 5 millimeters or whatever of where that span YCG is.
Mm-hmm.
But the core YCG, you can't measure unless you have a blade balancer.
Right.
Now, one way that I used to do it, like the getaway to kind of know if it was trailing edge or leading edge heavy, was to hang it on a nail. You hang a nail up on the ceiling, on the wall. You hang a nail, a long nail on the wall, and you put the blade on that nail. You literally hang the blade through the blade bolt hole on that nail.
Mm-hmm.
And you put a mark on the wall with a Sharpie or something, or a pencil. And you have to wait and be patient, wait until the blade settles, and then put a little mark on the wall with a pencil. Then you remove the blade and put the next blade on, another brand or whatever, and see where it settles. And you can tell, because it's not going to be at 90 degrees, it's going to want to settle somewhere, right? You can tell if that blade is more, the lead lag, absolutely. The really? Lead lag, yes.
No way.
Yeah, Vic Campbell, like switch blades. I used to do that with them. Yeah,
no definitely. Way.
Yeah.
I've never heard of
I
that.
I don't know that it gives you much of an indication of anything, but it shows you if the blade wants to lead or lag with respect to that bolt hole.
That's cool.
Naturally, right? Huh,
that's cool.
And that gets enhanced. But think about it. If you have a blade that is trailing edge heavy, right? You have your core YCG is focused more towards the trailing edge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about that blade mounted on a blade grip and you feeding collective. Forget cyclic. Just think of collective inputs, right? Imagine that weight. It's almost like it's fighting the natural motion of the blade grip feeding pitch, positive, negative. And it makes it unstable because as it's on the trailing edge, as it refuses to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then when it goes, it might go too much.
Mm-hmm.
If it's on the leading edge, it's stable, and that's what you want. But if it's too far to the leading edge, it's also going to be too stable to where pitch inputs are going to be sort of lagging or lethargic. It's not going to be a very responsive blade. So court-wise and span-wise CG work hand-in-hand.
I agreed.
I think that most blades on the market have a very close court-wise CG. There's very little to change there. You got to be in that right spot, which is one-third or depending on the airfoil, but it's about one-third or so, between one-third and one-half of the from the leading edge. It's always along the bolt hole, maybe a little bit towards the leading edge from the bolt hole. But the span YCG, I've seen great variations in different brands. Many different variations.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's all over the place. Yeah. It kind of depends on what they were going for when they were designing the blade.
Yeah, I agree.
And the style they were tuning for and all that. But
yeah, so I think we cover what makes a blade flip faster. It's all about CG and overall weight. It's a combination of both.
Yep.
It's the same thing than what makes a blade auto better, right?
Mm-hmm.
To flip faster, you need the opposite of what you need to auto better.
Mm-hmm.
To flip faster, you need more span YCG closer to the root,
mm-hmm.
you know, more than anything. And I wouldn't say core YCG affects that. I think core YCG is more, it affects flight in a sort of fast flight characteristics,
mm-hmm.
fast forward flight, fast loops, big loops in high speed, big hurricanes in high speed.
Snyders,
like Stefano would say. But I don't think core YCG affects the flip rate when you're stationary. It's the span YCG and the overall weight.
So you want to touch on something that's near and dear to my heart?
Which is?
Three-blade rotor heads.
Oh.
I know you hate them. I don't know why. They're great.
Whatever.
They're great. I love them.
Tell me why I hate them. You explain.
Because you are a hater. Because three-blade rotor heads are awesome. You can never get in tune with it.
Just be honest here. Come on. Tell me why I hate them. Tell the listeners why I hate them. You know why. Just say it.
You hate it.
It's like flying a dog.
It doesn't move.
It doesn't move.
It doesn't. Well,
you can make it move because you have Kyle Stacey cool hands, like Uncle D used to say.
Shut up. But you've touched on a point that I wanted to cover, that with the extra blade, it is inherently more stable because you have a whole extra blade there. So when it comes to smack and stuff like that, you really got to work it and you really got to force it.
You know what I compare three blade rotors? It would be like me designing a switchblade that weighs 375 grams.
Oh, okay. I think you're being a little extreme now. No.
I think I can accomplish the same with less parts and less expense when people crash.
Oh, God, you're an exaggerator. But you threw me off my train of thought. No, but three blades is cool. I mean, it's more stable. It tracks
two
better
blades,
and bigger.
375 grams a piece. Less parts. Less
Anyway, tracks better. I think it overall feels more locked in, but that's just my personal preference.
But you kill it with the three blade setup, and like at the Battle of the Brands last year, I'm surprised that you did not win, because I think that was hands down to me personally, and it's not because you're like my friend and whatever. I thought you killed. I can see how you can put. You can do these freaking maneuvers 2 inches off the ground with extreme precision and speed. And you can do it with a two-bladed rotor head, but I can tell that it comes more natural to you with the three blades. It really does.
And I don't know why. It just kind of came that way back in, God, I want to say late 2014 is when we started playing with it, SAB. And, you know, we worked on blades. Blades is the biggest factor. Without being too in-depth, you want a lighter set. I don't want to say it, give any numbers, because I've kind of got my parameters that I like, but a lighter set overall, and I think the CG is pretty generally similar. I know there's people out there who are going to disagree with me, but lighter blades, and I don't know, I just kind of felt in tune with it, locked in. And to this day, I fly mostly two blade, honestly, but when I fly a three blade, it feels awesome to me.
And it's important to say that if you are flying a three blade setup, you want very light blades.
Yes.
So whereas you're looking at 200 grams to 210 or somewhere in there over a two-blade setup on a flabberless system, you want what, 160?
Not to get specific, but anywhere from 140 to 170, somewhere in there.
Yeah. So, and that's where manufacturers struggle to make a blade that is that light, right?
Correct.
That's where it gets really tricky. So.
Yeah.
So you can take two sets of rails or two sets of switch or two sets of ETX and take three out of them and, you know, hope for the best, and it'll fly, and it'll fly okay. But
not great, but it'll work.
It'll work, but you'll see that your cyclic rate is greatly, greatly diminished.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a sport flyer, you might love it.
You could. I mean, yeah. Hey. Yeah, I mean, it's like Bird said, it's like putting 375 gram blades on a two-bladed head, you know, and it's...
No.
Probably would...
No. That's if you fly 150 gram blades on a three-bladed head. God. If you fly 200 gram blades on a three-bladed head, that's like putting 550 gram blades on a two-bladed head.
Oh, you're killing me. You're killing me.
You got anything else? We're past our time, man. This has been a long episode.
I got nothing else. I think we covered it more or less. It was a very technical episode, but I hope we kind of kept it light.
One thing I think we didn't talk about, and we'll cover it briefly, is materials. Materials. So,
yes.
Of course, most blades are made out of carbon fiber. We all know that.
Yes.
But the interesting thing is most blades are made with a foam core.
Mm-hmm.
So the manufacturer takes the core made out of foam, mm-hmm. and then they basically take the carbon fiber and they... put it in the mold, and then you end up with two halves, and those halves are sort of sandwiched together,
mm-hmm.
and baked in an oven. Depending on the manufacturing process, it could be up to 24 hours. There's a different manufacturing process, which I learned back in my day with Vic at V-Blades. That's very interesting. I think Vic was the only guy at the time, and I think even to this day, that was making the blades, of course, also with carbon fiber, but he was using a wood core.
Yes, wood.
Instead of foam. And that was quite interesting. It wasn't the two halves being baked traditionally. It was a wood core that was made out of balsa wood and balsa and bass.
Mm-hmm.
Bass wood was towards the leading edge. Balsa was towards the trailing edge. And then they would pre-balance the cores, the wood core, and they would be shaped to the exact shape of the blade.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would take the pre-preg type carbon fiber, and they would just wrap it around the leading edge, extending towards the trailing edge, and basically sort of a wrap design, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would go into the mold, and it would go into an autoclave that had negative pressure, and it would just be there for an hour. I think it was an hour or two, maybe an hour. when it came out of the autoclave, it was done. It was baked. It was ready.
Mm-hmm.
The carbon had adhered to the wood core, and it was good to go. And then this All Man Red was his name. He would just take the blade, and he would just literally sand all the imperfections that were sort of sticking out of the, you know, out of the mold,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Mainly the trailing edge and the tip and the little bit of the root area and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would drill the hole in the root. The root was reinforced with stronger wood as well as more carbon in it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would do the actual balancing, mm-hmm. The final balancing touches, and drill a hole in the blade and put more lead weight to match that set, and then cover that hole with a black epoxy.
And
it's a very manual process.
If I remember correctly, I could be way off on this, but the reason Vic wanted to use wood was to try and gain stiffness without using so much carbon, right? So to keep a stiffer blade and a lighter blade? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. And the beauty of the wood is it made the blade torsionally, so court-wise, very, very stiff.
Correct.
But the blade still gives span-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as much as a foam core blade, but it still gave enough to where it performed really well.
It was the blade to have back in the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, that thing would go in and out of the oven in an hour, so it was much better than waiting 24 hours for a batch to come out of the oven, right?
Sure.
And they were all hand balanced,
mm-hmm.
at the time. So, but mainly materials are these days are just foam and carbon fiber. And I think it could have been MS Composite or Spin or somebody used to do them hollow too. I've seen hollow blades where there's no core.
Really?
There's no wood, there's no foam, there's nothing. It's just a hollow blade on the inside. I mean, obviously the root is reinforced and everything else, but the actual blade itself was hollow.
Wow.
Yeah. I might be wrong this, but I'm pretty sure I'm not. So, yeah.
Hmm.
Crazy. A lot of different variations, a lot of different brands, a lot of different prices. I think you have to think safety first. You know, how well they fly to your like, and of mm-hmm. course, price, right?
Yep. Does that fit your budget? Yep.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong, but there are a lot of variables and a lot of things to look at. And I wish I could sit here and tell you what to use, but you just got to try them all out and choose for yourself.
I'm talking about V-Blaze. That is how I met my wife. So
that's right.
She thank you, Vic Campbell, for hooking me up with my wife. Yeah, it's awesome. She used to work at V-Blades when I she used to call me because I was a sponsor pilot. Hey Bert, I have an order for you. I just want to make sure I got the right address. This is Susie. I'm like, oh yeah, here's my address. I thought Susie was like a 70-year-old woman, and then I got to meet her, and she was like 30 or something. Yeah, so great. Thank you, Vic, for hooking me up.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Oh, boy.
Well.
Is that it?
Next week we're going to Urcha.
Oh boy.
Yeah, this has been a long episode, man. It's like 52 minutes. Crazy.
Wow. There's a lot to cover. But yeah, next week is Urcha. We're going to try and do some podcasting from Urcha. Maybe get some different people on the mic.
So we apologize in advance.
Mm-hmm.
We will not have an episode released next Wednesday.
Correct.
We would love to. We've been trying to every Wednesday, but... we're going to be traveling. We're going to be arriving there. We have a lot going on. But with that said, we're going to do a lot of podcasts from there. I think we're going to do at least two, right?
Correct. Yeah.
We're probably going to do like a live one.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to have extra content that we're going to do when we get back. So when we get back, you can expect our normal schedule to resume.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah. We'll announce stuff there. If we're going to go live, we'll make sure it's very apparent and very known on the Facebook and get some cool people behind the mic. Maybe get some special interviews. If you guys have anyone you want to hear from, let us know. We'll try and track them down and force a microphone in their face. Ask them some awkward questions. Get them going.
Yeah.
See what we can do. But
so, if you guys have any comments or any concerns, you can get a hold of us. Facebook. I don't remember what it is. The BK Official or the Official BK?
BK Official.
The BK
Official.
The BK Official.
Official BK.
I don't know. Just look us up. It's BK.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Not very easy to find, but it's there somewhere.
It's there.
And Instagram is the BK Official.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle, what's your Instagram?
SABUSA Official is my Instagram.
No, your Instagram.
Facebook.com/KyleStacyRC.
And Instagram?
The official SABUSA? Is it? I don't know.
All right. You can get a hold of me via Instagram at Bert_Kammer or Facebook at facebook.com/BertRC.
Yep.
Thank you for listening. We appreciate your support.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll speak with you in a couple of weeks.
See ya.